afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are, sat in our podcast room in sunny Southampton, he says, with an overcast, looking like it's going to rain. It is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful feeling that I have to be sat here with two of my great colleagues, Ellis Sweetenham and Samuel Killoran. And the reason why I asked them very, very kindly to join me today is because Ellis started discussing a very interesting news article that she was reading earlier. And I said, well, let's get downstairs into the podcast room and we can discuss it. So, Ellis, hi, how are you doing?
Good afternoon. I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good, good. Samuel, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Why is everyone so good all the time? Why can't we just say at one point, I'm not feeling great today, actually, but let's get on with it.
Well, that's because we've had lunch.
Well, that's
we're
true.
We're all happy. Patiently waiting for the weather to start warming up.
Absolutely.
Yes.
At the end of the winter.
So you are feeling good. Well, that's great. Who is not feeling good in the news at the moment, Ellis?
That would be the Rolling Stones.
The Rolling Stones. Now, for those of you who don't know the Rolling Stones, who are the Rolling Stones, Sam?
They are a very, very big rock band.
A very, very big rock band. So just for our listeners, Sam is, I mean, he likes a little bit of music, but...
I saw them once, they did a really large catwalk.
They did. You saw them at the Isle of Wight Festival. But generally speaking, you can ask Sam anything about music and he hasn't got a clue.
No.
So I'm going to move to you now, Ellis. So legally, this is a legal podcast, so I want to jump straight into it after the niceties have gone out. So the Rolling Stones are not feeling great. Why?
Well, you would think a band that has been around for more than 60 years wouldn't have this problem, but they have this week been hit with a copyright infringement claim.
Copyright infringement claim. So let's go back to basics. Copyright is?
It's the automatic protection of the... of an expression of an idea.
Okay.
So it's rights that arise automatically when a literary, artistic, dramatic or musical work is created that is original.
You are good at your job, Ellis. Well done. So you said the word copyright infringement. So we've understood for our listeners what copyright means.
Yes.
I am going to ask you though just to put that back into basics just for our listeners again, please. So copyright is...
Copyright is the protection of an expression of an idea. So, for example, the idea to write a book about a boy that discovers he's a wizard and goes to a magical school isn't protected by copyright, but Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix and the written books, the books themselves, are protected by copyright.
Okay, okay. So I like the way that you had to throw in Harry Potter there because you are
always
a big fan.
Always.
Absolutely. You mentioned the word infringement. So we now understand loosely what copyright is and what it represents. You also said that it's automatic. So
yes.
It arises automatic. It's not something that has to be registered in some database or in some system. It's automatically there.
It is, yes.
Okay. But you said the word infringement. So therefore...
Yes, so copyright provides you with the right to stop anyone else from copying your work. So copyright infringement is when those rights have been infringed, been affected by someone else copying your work or a substantial part of your work.
So when we say the word work, I mean, you've already gone into detail there, specifically for the purposes of this podcast, work means the music.
Yes, the music.
Or a part of the music.
Yes, so a song is broken down into a few elements. You have the actual music compilation, you have the words, and then you also have performance rights. So, for example, if you were to make an illegal copy of the Rolling Stones' latest album and you were to start distributing that on the internet, then... you are also then infringing the performance rights as well. So there is a couple of elements here, but in this circumstance, we're talking about the music and the lyrics.
Understood, understood. So we're talking about the music and the lyrics. Now I think it's time for you to explain specifically what is it that the Rolling Stones are to have done?
Yes.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. So an artist called Sergio Fernandez, goes by the stage name Angel Slang.
Heard of them, Sam?
No.
No.
Not one of your favourites.
No,
one of
not,
your favorites.
Wasn't expecting you to say yes. Please, sorry, Ellis, carry on.
So he is claiming that the Rolling Stones' latest single, Living in a Ghost Train, again, not one of my favourites, but, you know, I will listen, is infringing his song, So Sorry, and also another one of his tracks, Seed of God.
So just to pause there, I want to be clear. So this artist is claiming that his original works have been infringed by the Rolling Stones,
yes,
but not one track that has been, for, you know, in terms of the, you know, a slang term for it, ripped off.
Mm-hmm.
So this artist is not saying that the Rolling Stones have ripped off one of his tracks to make their single, which, forgive me, is called...
Living in a Ghost Train.
Living in a Ghost Train. But in fact, he's ripped off parts of two of their songs.
Yes. So he claims that he gave the demo of these songs to a member of Mick Jagger's family, and that Living in a Ghost Train takes the vocal melodies, the chord progressions, the drum beat patterns, the harmonica parts, the electric bass line parts, the tempos, and other key signatures from his song So Sorry, and the harmonic and chord progression and melody from another one of his songs called Seed of God.
Okay, that's a lot to take in. Now, I think for the purposes of our listeners, when something like this happens, usually the process would be for a letter to land on the doorstep of the Rolling Stones, and I'm sure it's not just appearing at one of their lovely big houses, it would have gone to the record label. But essentially, they're saying, they meaning him and his legal team, this artist mm-hmm. and his legal
yeah.
team, they're saying, you've infringed. Do you admit it? Do you accept it? And if you do accept it, how are you going to...
account for it.
Yeah. I'm thinking more in terms of the damages point. And what recompense can I get from it?
Yes.
So what I thought we could now do is just consider the contents of a copyright infringement letter. And the reason why I want to do this is because I want to abuse your brain... Because you draft these letters quite frequently, don't you?
I do. It is something that happens a lot. So it's one of those things that there's quite a lot of elements to identify and confirm with a copyright infringement claim. Because the registration process isn't there, first things first, you have to prove ownership. So while copyright arises automatically, it's for the claimant to prove that they own the copyright works that they are claiming they do. So that's the first step. If you can establish ownership, then that's sort of the first step to them making your claim. The second part to prove is whether a substantial part of your copyright protected work has been copied. So that is quality over quantity. So it could be that you've gone with the very famous sort of riff or lyrics or something in a song that's very famous and recognisable, but that's actually, say, 1% or 2% of the whole works in its entirety. That is still sufficient for that claim to go ahead. So it's a case of confirming your ownership, detailing what that work is and where it sits under the definition of copyright, like I said before, what sort of work is it, and then how that protection has been infringed. So what part of the work has been copied?
So just to pause there, Ellis, because you know, this is a really, really interesting approach that you're taking to how our listeners can identify, certainly if they're finding that this is the case for themselves, what we can expect, because we've been told some of our podcasts has been very useful, that people might be taking a note on this. They may be just wanting to get to the end of it so they can pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Just summarise what you've just said there, just in bullet point form, because I think possibly if there's anyone that's sweating there, going, crikey, I can't write so fast, to summarise, what is it that you're saying that you need to include that it has to be able to show if you think you actually have a claim to be heard?
So the first things first is, what is the work? What is it that you're claiming that you have? Two, can you prove that you own it? When was it created? What records have you got? What sort of paperwork? I know these days it's not physical paperwork, but what evidence have you got that you own it? What are you claiming has happened? What are you saying the other person has done or created that impacts you? How significant is it? What part of your work have they copied?
Mm.
Is that enough to be deemed substantial? Like I said, quality over quantity. And how has that affected you? What do you want from it?
That's the crux of it, isn't it? How has that affected you?
Yeah.
What damage have you suffered as a result of what's happened? What has the other party benefited from
yes.
as a result of this alleged infringement? So what is it that someone can, you know, ultimately look to seek as recompense for the damage that's been suffered.
Money, money, money.
Money.
Damages.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because quite frankly, when certainly in the music industry, and we do, you know, we get a lot of phone calls, we do act for, you know, a number of artists where they say, it's just unfair. I'm looking at this artist that is, other artists could be a band, you know, that are much bigger than I, you know, I'm happy on the circuit that I'm in. But they're making millions and millions of pounds or dollars off of the back of work that I have put so much time and effort into, and I feel really cheated that I've not been able to have any say in that. And it's not just about money, it's also about reputation. They've put so much work into that. They're not even being given any credit for it. So even though it can be turned into money, it also needs to be turned into credit. Because if you can identify that you have worked tirelessly on certain material, and others who have got a much bigger label than you, that are out there around the world, much bigger following, if you can say, you know, head held high, they've actually given me credit for this, that's great. You know, go ahead, you know, jog on, crack on. But as long as I get credit for it. And it would be nice also to get some money for my work that I've put into it.
It's all about recognition, isn't it? And
absolutely.
Reputation.
So next stage, Ellis, we've identified all of these factors. Mm-hmm. The innocent party in this has picked up the phone, they've spoken to you. You've explained all these things to them. They've then come into the office, they, you know, produced the evidence. You're now able to draft one of your killer letters to be sent out. What then?
So most cases, especially in sort of the level of normal people, Rolling Stones aside, it would be resolved by way of a letter. So we would send our letter, someone would come back to us, maybe pushing back a little bit, but ultimately we would reach a settlement where both parties are happy, and there may be some remuneration in terms of damages, and that's it.
Okay.
But in other cases, it's then to progress to formal legal proceedings.
Absolutely. Now, this is the bit that I've been waiting for. We can actually relate this to another podcast that Ellis and I had gone into depth in discussing, because actually the back and forth with a rather famous case actually didn't settle, and a very famous artist said, no, I'm not having this, I will see you in court.
Mr. Ed Sheeran.
Absolutely, Ed Sheeran. Now, we were really, really impressed with the detail from the media that they were allowing us all to read about, to hear about, you know, to really follow within this, because it went to court. You know, action was taken against Ed Sheeran, which isn't the first time.
No.
May not be the last. And when it actually commenced and we ended up with court proceedings, you and I went into detail and we discussed it. Can you recall what happened with that matter in the first instance?
Yeah, so Ed Sheeran is probably a prime example of an artist that has been hit more often than most with copyright infringement claims. And it's one of those things that most of them, he will just try and settle out of court, like most artists do, just to save the time and the hassle and the potential damage to reputation in going to court and sort of having your dirty laundry aired. But in this particular case, he wanted to make it an example, and he went to court armed with his recordings and his detailed analysis as to the intricacies of songs.
And armed with his guitar, I understand.
And his guitar. He performed live in the court to demonstrate his point, effectively.
Yeah, but how did he demonstrate that? Can you remember? I thought it was ingenious. I'm a fan of Ed Sheeran, I really am. I listen to his music all the time. My 8-year-old son, every single morning, is blasting out Ed Sheeran tracks, okay? He actually, he was able to show in court that he, with his guitar, that he could play any song with certain chords.
Yes.
And he went through from one track to another and was able to jig it up and say that with these, I think there was at one point, there was three chords. He was able to use three chords to be able to play any number of tracks and identify that any argument that this could be an infringement on that, and then this could be an infringement on that, and then this could be an infringement on that, cannot be held, cannot hold up using these principles.
Yeah, the whole music world will be in the court all of the time.
Okay, so in terms of Ed Sheeran and that particular case, what happened, Ellis? How did it end up being settled? Because it was in court, it was in the public eye.
Yes, so he was successful in defending the claim, and he was awarded quite a significant amount of costs for that. And yes, he was successful. It became quite the example, I think, as he wanted it to be, that all of these copyright infringement claims that sort of are filed, a lot of them potentially aren't based on anything significant, and that artists should be allowed a little bit of freedom to create music. Otherwise, the more and more you restrict it, the less and less music that will be made, the less freedom
Absolutely.
Artists will have.
And there are some very famous cases over the years in terms of copyright claims. Now, our incredible Beth Brookfield actually has just drafted an article where she's explored certain of those cases, which you can read on our website or on our social media. And it's an interesting read. She came in to do some work experience with me, and the first task was, come on, let's really look into the music law aspect. You know, it is an amazing area to explore. Start with some famous cases, but let's just focus on copyright and rather than any contractual issues as such.
Yes.
And it's a great read, so go away and have a listen to it.
Yeah.
But this one is another example of things that happen all the time and they usually settle out of court.
Yes.
But to really bring this back to the Rolling Stones, Sam, what do you think, based on what you've been listening to here this morning and the afternoon, about it?
I think it would be useful to know where popular music can in some respects be quite similar. Lots of musicians listen to music, they take inspiration from others.
Mm-hmm.
How does the judge decide when inspiration has drifted towards infringement?
I think it all comes down to direct knowledge. So in this case, the claimant is claiming that those specific songs were sent to a member of Mick Jagger's family, and therefore it could have directly impacted the creation of their song. So if it's a case of inspiration whereby it's sort of the sound of that year or the sound of that season, and just in general there's a similar flavour, however in this case he's saying his song has literally been cut up like a cake. Songs have been cut up like a cake, and specific bits have been taken quite crudely, literally taken out and plonked into a Rolling Stone song.
Okay. We are going to watch and listen to this unfold. We haven't formed an opinion yet. There's very little that we've got available to us. So do stay tuned, and we'll probably follow this up when there's been further information provided as to how this case unfolds.
Yeah.
But for now, if you do wish to discuss with the great Ellis Sweetenham, any potential claim that you have, any concerns you have, it might not be a claim at this time. It may be quite simply that you need to discuss with someone your case so that you can take some guidance or advice moving forward. Then do pick up the phone, 02380-235979. Samuel, your task for me, after this podcast has ended, is you're going to go away and you're going to listen to Rolling Stones back catalogue, and you're going to come back to me and you're going to tell me your top 10 favourite Rolling Stones tracks. Is
Please
that a deal?
Please do leave that in the comments for our listeners also.
Thank you very much. Okay, so thanks for joining, Sam. I hope you found it interesting being part of this podcast. And thank you, Ellis, for taking the time out to do this, because you're a very busy lady. So thanks. Take care, and I'll speak to you all soon. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.